Hey guys, Matt Donald here. This is the part where I tell you about my Patreon. And guess what? I still have a Patreon at patreon.com/MatthewDonald. There you can buy, well, I guess buy is the correct term. That was a bit of a Freudian slip there, but that is correct. You can buy/find bonus content about pop culture featuring prehistoric animals. And this month, we're having a bit of a wild card because I'm in a rut here where I'm recording this later in the month rather than earlier. So it's going to be one of three very different things. It's either going to be Walking with Dinosaurs, the documentary, The Valley of Guanji, Ray Harryhausen's stop-motion anime film about cowboys and dinosaurs, or Ratchet & Clank Tools of Destruction, the game that has alien dinosaurs in one level. It's going to be one of those three things. So enjoy whichever one it is. Link is in the description for you can sign up to the Patreon. Thank you for your support and have a good day. The show continues to be as professional as ever.
Roar. Growl. Snarl. Bellow.
Welcome to Paleobites, the podcast as classic as the Jurassic. My name is Matthew Dahl, and each week on a rotating series of guest co-hosts, talk about and rate a genus of prehistoric animal, be it dinosaur, mammal, arthropod, and so on. This week I'm joined by someone who is a classic co-host that you've been here since episode, I believe, 2. you were the first one I ever recorded with, though, to be fair.
Really?
Because I recorded them all. I made sure before I uploaded them and started putting them all in order, I had a bunch of them ready to go, and you were the first person I recorded with. So the classic co-host of Paleobites is Stephen Curro. How are you?
I am great, and I am always happy to be here.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? good stuff. We're talking about some dinosaurs and some other stuff. We're talking about an obscure dinosaur today. This is one where it's like I did like the dinosaur generator thing where it's just like, show me a random dinosaur, and it pops up. I'm like, oh, I have no other reason to talk about this one. So but there's some interesting stuff with this one. But before we get to it, a dinosaur related question. If you could imagine any dinosaur as a pirate, which one and why? I don't know.
It's a very interesting question.
I like to imagine that rather than having a parrot, it has a little human on. Especially if it's a big enough dinosaur, it doesn't even have to be a shrunken human.
Maybe,
it's
like, maybe a pterosaur, like a little rampant.
Yeah, I like that, yeah.
Gee whiz. I could totally see...
How about Archaeopteryx? I didn't do that just for this one joke. I just came up with that, I swear.
That fits, totally.
Argentinosaurus.
I don't know why I keep picturing Dilophosaurus.
I mean, I don't know. It has got the crest. Kind of looks like a hat. It kind of looks like a sailor's hat. Crest.
It might be because you had a character in Megazoa.
Oh, yes.
Based off of Errol Flynn.
Yes.
So
yes. I don't know if he ever played any pirates. He did play Robin Hood. He played some of those.
Was
he in? Did Errol Flynn play any pirates?
No. I'm confusing him with Burt Lancaster.
Oh.
Never mind.
Oh, well, Burt Lancaster. Errol Flynn sounds better than Burt Lancaster.
he was a fun actor, though. He was a circus performer.
So oh, I'm sure. That's cool. That's cool.
He was a pirate in one of his movies. Anyway,
Dilophosaurus. Yes, Dilophosaurus. Anyway, Dilophosaurus. That's good. It makes sense. He has like the mentality, and again, his crest kind of looks like the hat. So
kind of like a tricorn hat. Yeah.
Bighorn hat. So, yeah, whatever it's called. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Dilophosaurus. Okay, I'm going to pick Archaeopteryx. Was it like two pirates? Was that joke? Two pirates are sailing the high seas, and there's a storm coming. And the other one says, like, there be treacherous waters ahead. The other one's like, there are treacherous waters ahead.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one.
My favorite parts in First Pirates of the Caribbean is that one point when, one of my favorite parts is when Jeffrey Rush first explains to Elizabeth the curse, and then when she tries to escape at one point, he's just like, "Arr!" Jeffrey Rush was having the time of his life.
He's the perfect pirate, honestly. Yeah.
I did also find out from him, but this is before we get to Desinteress, that he mandated that he's on the left side of the frame whenever there's multiple people on screen as much as possible, because he believes, and I can see this seeming true, that people's eyes naturally go from left to right when watching the screen, so he wanted to be on screen first.
Hmm.
So,
well, as the villain and later just really fun character,
really fun anti-hero.
I can see that.
When he dies a second time in the last one, you kind of feel bad for him that time.
Yeah, he finally found his daughter, and it was kind of sad. You know, while we're on the subject of pirates, when I worked for Dinosaur Ridge,
yes,
I went on outreach to the Denver State Fair one time, And I got drafted into
Got drafted into Pirates? You got shanghaied?
I got drafted into a Talk Like a Pirate contest, and I won.
That's cool.
Arr!
Pirates are fun!
So
except they're terrible. And they're
right, I know.
Disease-ridden.
Like we really romanticize.
Terrible to women.
We romanticize them.
Yeah, like, but, except for the ones that were women, like Anne Barlow.
But yes, the question that I think pulled me over, the question was, you have been found in the bottom of the ship with a goat, a cannon, and like a jar of marmalade or something like that. How do you explain yourself? So off the top of my head, I went, "Gar, don't be giving me that sort of look. I lost a bet."
I did have that one character in my Megazoic books, Azurak, that was kind of
piratey,
but more like kind of. I meant him more like colonial sailor-y. He did talk like a pirate, but I meant him more.
Right, I remember that guy. Sinking on me ships, you know.
Yeah, Lamphra. That was me trying to like look up what are some Jurassic Indian dinosaurs, and that's the one that came up. So,
speaking of obscure dinosaurs,
yeah, we're talking about Dicentrurus, which means the one with a tail full of points.
Oh.
Type is a stegosaur, a group of armored dinosaurs closely related to the ankylosaurs and nodosaurs. A bunch of spiky boys, this lot. Size 26 to 30 feet, so it's 8 to 9 meters long, 5 to 5.5 tons. That's approaching stegosaurus size, which is amazing because stegosaurus is usually so much bigger than the rest of the family.
Yeah,
like, look at the other ones like Kentrosaurus and Tujiangosaurus and Gigantospinosaurus. They're all like 15 or so feet long.
Sounds like he had a rival.
Yeah. Diet herbivore. Time of like Jurassic to early Cretaceous, 150 to 140 million years ago. Location, England.
Oh.
This actually was the first, I think it might have been the first stegosaur discovered, I think. Or was the first one found in Europe? I don't know. It's the best one found in Europe. I looked in. So.
I thought Stegosaurus was the first because every other animal in that group is a stegosaurid.
Well, I think this was discovered first but wasn't officially described as a stegosaurid until later.
Okay, that makes more sense.
They were like, what is this weird lizard thing? Like a not, I mean, because like, remember like one of the original three dinosaurs with the one that people always forget because there's Iguanodon and Megalosaurus. There was also Hyliosaurus, which is like a nodosaurid. Mm. I guess they thought it was related more to that. So described in 1875, pop culture appearances. Apparently one is in the background of Land Before Time 7, The Stone of Cold Fire.
Huh.
That's the one with the aliens, so why not throw a Dicentrurus in there? I don't know. Also, it's in the Roblox game Dinosaur Simulator.
Is that a Roblox game? Oh, my goodness.
And also, like I said, I used it as one of my shades in my second Megazoic book, The Primal Power.
Right, right.
I don't know why I didn't just use a Kentrosaurus. I guess I was trying to be unique.
Well, wasn't Zolgarland originally Kentrosaurus?
Yes, but then I was like, Stegosaurus it is. But I came with that later. I don't know. Anyways, back in the olden days of dinosaur knowledge yore, a man named Professor Richard Owen.
Oh, Richard Owen.
One of the great olden day dinosaur knowledgeists. And the one I particularly mistakenly compared to Arthur Dennison to in the appearance in our Patreon episode of Downtopia. I actually meant Edward Drinker Cope. Because I remember when we did Downtopia, I'm like, this guy looks like one of those paleontologists. I forgot which one. It's Edward Drinker Cope that he looks exactly like. So he was informed that a fossil skeleton was uncovered in clay pits in Wiltshire, England. And so he had his team secure the specimen and take it to London. Due to its robust humerus, he named the species Omosaurus, or upper arm lizard. Later bones found on the Cambridge clay and Cambridgeshire formations, not formations, kind of like those areas, were uncovered in the following years and were each giving new species names within this Omosaurus genus. In fact, a total of 5 different species were named within this genus, so clearly all the paleontologists wanted to get in on this Omosaurus action. Alas, though, it was later revealed that the name Omosaurus was already taken by a Triassic phytosaur. You know the phytosaurs?
Yeah, they're sort of like crocodilians.
Kind of. They're like archosauriforms.
Crocodilian-ish.
They're not even like in the Crocodilomorph family. I think they're before that. But like they're archosauriforms, though. So like the early archosaurs. Turns out Omosaurus is actually one of these. But like I said, in the time we talked about sarcophagus, you know, they're forgiven, though, because Google wasn't a thing back then. They have no way of knowing.
You know how many lines of paperwork that you have to go through to when you're researching without Google.
Yeah, it's like
all of those ancient papers also, that people write.
And, well, and also you wouldn't even know where to start because it's not just like, oh, look at all life. You have to be like all different, this type of life, this type of life, this type of life. Right. Nowadays, if you want to describe a new species, you can just Google, is this taken?
So much more.
So much easier. Technology can be good sometimes, listeners. So, but it turns out Omosaurus turned out to be dubious itself as the phytosaur that accompanied the name turned out to be not known from sufficient evidence. So the name just can't catch a break. But in 1902, American zoologist Frederick Augustus Lucas renamed the genus Decentrus, which I gotta say does not roll off the tongue. Decentrus. It's that ruru at the end.
I keep thinking of decentralized. When
it does look like decentralized. I think the centra comes from like sort of like Centrosaurus, which is also the same as Kentrosaurus, but just with a C instead of a K.
Rhymes,
means the same thing too. So means spiked lizard for both of them. No word should have ruru in it. I actually looked up like what other words have ruru in the middle. They're all dinosaurs or scientific things.
Sounds like my German shepherd talking.
Makes me think of Finding Dory. Remember Finding Dory when they when they were trying to get Becky? And he was like, ruru, ruru, Becky. But there's a dinosaur, another dinosaur in it with ruru. You ever heard of Tolarurus? Tolarurus?
No, I don't know that one.
It's an ankylosaur whose only claim to fame is at the beginning of Disney's Dinosaur, where two of them are belling at each other at a river.
Oh,
that's a
that
Tolarurus.
No,
yeah.
Awesome.
Aldar's egg pops up and one of them sniffs it. Yeah, that's an esteemed performance by Tolarurus. I can only assume it was in the runnings for all the year 2000 film awards for its 3-second appearance in Disney's Dinosaur. Don't know why they didn't just reuse the model for Earl, the little dog ankylosaur, but maybe they wanted, I don't know, good on them. Anyways, Decentrus is the best known stegosaur from Europe, although technically Stegosaurus itself also had some fossils known from Portugal, just not as many known specimens from Europe as Decentrus. Despite them being close in size, the body plans are actually quite different. Decentrus had two pairs of plates lining symmetrically, rather than the asymmetrical one off the other one that Stegosaurus had.
I do like symmetry.
Yeah, it is nice. Bilateral symmetry. All of us have, except for crabs. For some reason, they're like... And it's not all the same one. Sometimes some crabs have the left claw and some of them have the right claw. Have you seen that? Why?
I've wondered that too. It's so clunky and awkward.
I mean, I know we're dominant-handed.
And then they walk sideways.
Yeah.
Ugh, crabs.
But yet, crabs are the most efficient animal. Carcinization has happened 5 times in evolution. But so, I don't know. Ugh, crabs. So... What was I talking about? all right. So also Decentrus had a bunch of spikes lying down its lower back and tail, hence its name, the one with the tail full of points. Also, unlike Stegosaurus, Decentrus had longer forelimbs than hind limbs, kind of like Brachiosaurus.
Sounds very awkward.
Well, that's why it was originally called Omosaurus, the upper arm lizard, because of those things.
Makes sense.
It also might be, I don't know if it's longer overall, it might be more like the upper arms were longer, but the other one, but like, so they kind of evened out in terms of like...
Must have been a very stout walker.
Yeah, yeah. So exactly, like, and in terms of its, the dinosaurs it's closest to, and in terms of stegosaurids, its subfamily stegosaurids were actually known for its oddly lengthy features, as this is very closely related to Marigaia, which is one you like.
Yeah, it's just really pretty
cool. Long neck stegosaur. That's pretty cool. Stegosaurus had quite a long neck now, we think. You ever seen what modern Stegosaurus looks like? It looks kind of different from what we... Like, the back doesn't arch quite as much and has a longer neck.
And the tail is more level.
Yeah, it doesn't dip like we used to think it did. It's kind of weird. People, it didn't dip in its depiction in The Lost World, but it did in Jurassic World. Although they fixed it in Fallen Kingdom.
My boss got so mad at Jurassic World for the dipping tail.
Yeah. The things paleontologists, honestly, I've read most paleontologists don't care about inaccuracies in movies because they're just like, hey, I mean, yeah, it'd be better if they're more accurate, but it's more representation for dinosaurs in media. And it gets more people interested in the science,
yeah.
But it's mostly just the armchair paleontologists on Twitter. They're like, blah, 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 blah. 65 looks like they're monsters. By the time this episode comes out, that movie will have been long out.
What bothers me more is when people criticize just doing fantastical things, like making the Indominus Rex. I knew a woman. She went, oh, that's too sci-fi for me. I was like, the entire series is about genetically engineered dinosaurs.
Yeah,
it's
like, well, that's the line for you. Jurassic World is more sci-fi than the others, if only just because they had holograms in the in the area. Although I've seen people, because like the problem with holograms, I used to think they were real because I see them so much. No, they're not. You can't have the light bouncing off of.
Well, no, like they're all, it's all sci-fi so far.
But like I've seen people come close when you have like a fan, like in terms of like some sort of thing where it's like you create stuff that like floats and then you can have the light bouncing off of that.
Okay. I mean, I did in the really old obscure show Sequest DSV, the captain had, I think it was supposed to be a hologram system in his room. He could talk to the computer and it was basically just a stream of smoke that fell down and they put a projector on it.
That's cool.
So yeah.
Yeah. I've seen people, and I think it was like mist is what you can use to bounce the light off of. Right. I mean, hey,
I think we'll figure out real holograms one day.
Yeah, I want hard light. I want to be full-on Green Lantern. Or like the color Hiroshi in my Megazoic book. So, but yeah. Anyways, buy my books, kids. So,
in case you didn't notice the plug already. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Even though, look. But so that's probably like all I could fit an episode for of Dicentrists. So if you're one of the presumably many, many, many people who call themselves proud Dicentrists fans, sorry I didn't cover anything. The fan club must be so disappointed.
Oh, darn.
I've said Dicentrists a ton lately. You know, it's like a tongue twister. It doesn't even sound like a word anymore. Dicentrists, Dicentrists, Dicentrists.
Decentralists.
Decentralized.
It's like a very political anarchist dinosaur.
It's one of those centrist ones. It's like when some people are like, we want basic rights. And that person's like, we want to enslave those people. And they're like, compromise? That's Dicentrists. How dare you? You fence-sitting piece of crap. it's saying so much and yet nothing at the same time. Like I think we should be friends with the Nazis.
What? No.
That's what the Centurist is saying.
No wonder the other stegosaurs don't talk to them.
The one with the tail full of points. You're not full of points at all. You have no points. You're pointless.
Talking no.
Shove it up the tail full points, though, yeah.
Peace with Nazism is not a point.
No. Every day is Punch a Nazi Day. Where does this show go?
Rabbit holes we go down.
So many rabbit holes. So let's rate Dicentrists 1 out of 65 million. I mean, I guess since it's a centrist Nazi sympathizer. It's not that, though. In terms of centrist, though, I don't know. I guess it gets middle, 33 million.
I mean, you know.
Maybe like 20 million. I don't know.
I don't know. I
say it was a shade in my Megazord book, but it's not like it had much character. The only shade that had really any character was the main one, Sinatho. The rest were kind of just cannon fodder.
You know, it had really weird legs, so I'll give it a 40 million.
Oh, wow. The weird legs give it 40 million. Wow. It's that bonus. What was his name? It was Hedic. That's right, because they're all named after various shadowy gods, except for Sinatho, which is just kind of like synthetic, is kind of, but also like sinister. It's like,
right.
But then there was like Mosspell, which is like Muspelheim from Norse mythology. There was Hedic, was like Hecate. Nolix is like Nyx and Nox from the shadowy source things. And then the one that's a long neck, but a small long neck. What was he? Apoxis, I think. Apocus, which is like Apophis from Egyptian mythology.
Is it Apophis or Apophis?
Apophis, maybe.
Okay.
But he was called Apocus, I think. Apocus or something. I don't know. The best part about the shades is when, again, spoiler alert, was when Fleer killed them all at the end. That was meant to show him taking a level in badass. Like, the shades have been bothering him the entire book. He gets a new sword and he takes down them all one at a time.
He's a... Don't mess with that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Anyway, so that's it for this week. If you want to get a hold of the show, you can contact me at mattdeep@matthewnoncreator.com. For any general questions any of the co-hosts, you can find me on social media at matthewnoncreator on Facebook, matthewnon64 on Twitter, and matthewnon64 on Instagram. Where can they find you, Steven?
You can find me at stephenccurro.com. Steven Seeker.
Yes, got so many short stories there. Every time I see you, like, I've published 12 new short stories.
Well, I mean, minor publications. It's not like I'm.
Yeah, but still, like, you got quite the portfolio.
Well, I mean, you have 5 novels, so
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no, I have 5 novels.
That's what I'm saying. You have 5 novels.
So I have 5 novels. Yeah, I do.
I have
soon to be 6. Hopefully,
I have 2 full finished novels, and neither of them are published. But one day.
Well, it's because you're doing the traditional publishing route, which, man, I want you to succeed. I want you to succeed so badly. I mean, I really do,
it's
because
to the point where I might have to go self-publish.
I mean, I get it.
And it's just so—it's soul sucking.
It really is. Oh my god! If you have any personal rejections yet, because I never did.
The closest I got was one agent actually referenced my main character in her rejection.
Okay, that's more than I got.
You actually took a look. Yay!
Yeah, most of the time when I got rejection, it was just like, thank you for submitting. Unfortunately, we've decided not, we don't have the time for this. But don't worry, keep submitting and you'll find some. Like, it's the most.
We understand this is very subjective. Oh, do you?
Do you? I envision, again, this is where my mind just makes up things to be mad at. But I imagine what's going to happen is that if I ever manage to, like, get my books bigger to the point, because, like, you have connections. Like, my girlfriend has a lot of connections. That's what I'm trying to do. Try and slowly get my name up there. If it gets bigger, then the publishers start coming to me, and I'm like, oh, so it isn't about good stories, dude. It's about profitability.
Well, that's what it always is. They look at the story, and the first question is, can I market it?
Yeah.
Which is
but then,
really
which is, like, which, again, like, fine, be transparent about it, though. Don't be like, we market great stories. We're all about what it takes to make a good story. Oh, you're not.
We love working with authors.
We love working with storytellers.
Storytellers who make us a lot of money. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Yeah. Just say it out loud. Be upfront. At least then I'll have some respect for you. Like, well, you're transparent.
At least you're upfront. Fair enough.
Welcome to Moneybags Publishing.
Moneybags Publishing.
For all your, I was about to say young adult paranormal romance, but that's not even a thing anymore. Neither is dystopian sci-fi. That's been out of the gate.
No, it totally is. They make new stuff. I mean, there hasn't been anything as, like, gigantic.
As Hunger.
I mean,
The Maze Runner,
kind of. But,
the book I've seen a lot of people read recently is, like, what is that one called? It's like A Crown of Thorn and Roses, is that?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a song. It's like a blank of blank and blank. It's A Song of Ice and Fire, Crown of Thorn and Roses. A tune of Frost and Flame. That's just
young adult dystopia is not going away. It's just, it's become more mainstream now.
Yeah. Anyways, Decentralist. Oh, that's right. We already finished it. Like I said, I have a book series on Amazon Megazoic available for print and Kindle. If you want to see the deep and riveting three-dimensional character of the Decentralist that is in my books. Yeah, he's in the Pineapple of Power. It's pretty good. His name's Haddock. He's a shade. That's pretty cool. He's a dinosaur shade. There's more to it than that, though, even though I've spoiled everything else, including that he gets killed by Falir.
Read the books. You'll be in for a while.
There's a lot of details. And again, there's more to it than this. All right. That's it for this week. It's at the end of every episode of Paleolites.
Yeah, just forget the science. That's the sound it makes.
All right, bye.
Bye.